Good morning. My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
So, you know, I've told my story a number of times, and it's not necessarily that I changed my story. It's just my mind kind of flits around, and today I was... I wanted to be brief about a few things that I used to hear, and then I would wonder, why in the world is somebody sharing that? What does it have to do with alcoholism? But sort of the foundation of my my family is I didn't understand till I was 27. I was told that my dad was an alcoholic. I didn't understand that there was a history in my family of alcoholism. It was sort of hidden. So I was sort of raised with this delusion that our family was an old Seattle family. We arrived in 1872, and we were really wonderful. And I had... an uncle that was a president of a bank, and an uncle that was president of a construction company, and one of an insurance company, and yet our family was poor, you know, and that was confusing to me. You know, it was sort of... So what I came to find out when I was 27 is just after Christmas... that my dad got a degree in labor economics in the 30s, a master's degree, and he worked for the NLRB, and then he wrote articles for the ACLU, and then McCarthy accused him of being a communist, and my dad was fired, and our family went bankrupt, and my dad worked as a clerk and didn't make very much money. And so early on, like when I was about 8 years old, I figured out I wasn't going to be poor. My priority was to make money. And so then I'll just go forward is that I stumbled academically. I had a few learning disorders. And then by the time I was 15 and a half when I had my first beer, and I just tell you, it was wonderful. You know, it was like that experience of sort of feeling like I had my place, that I had never felt that way before. And so who wouldn't want to feel that way? And so it kind of went pretty quickly. Like within 3 to 6 months from a once a week to several times a week. And then I was booted off the high school baseball team, and I barely graduated from college. I tried college, and I was drafted. I was into the Army for a little while in 1969 and 1970. And my drinking continued. And then when I got back to Seattle, what I'd try and do to control my drinking is I'd go up into the mountains for the weekend. So I'd find a typical kind of weekend would be I'd drink beer from Seattle up to the North Cascades. I'd do 10 to 14 miles. I'd do a climb. I'd come out, and then I'd buy a six-pack, and I'd drink on the way home. But at least I had a little window of time every week where I was dry. And I would not look at weather reports, and people would go with me, and we would frequently get stuck in rotten weather, and what was supposed to be a one-night climb would be a two- or three-night deal, and people became hesitant to go on climbs with me. and so I went through being a laborer, a carpenter, a foreman, a superintendent, doing out-of-town jobs. And then I came, was working out of town. I came back into town. And the gal I was going out with said, if you want to live here, we should get married. And I said, that was fine. And she really was a nice person. It was just, I was disconnected. I didn't understand marriage or relationships. And we were about 6 months married and went up to climb Mount Goody the last week of June. And it started snowing, and we were going to do the northeast buttress, and then it snowed for just about a week. And the short of it is we were stuck on the mountain and had 3 or 4 days of the only water was sucking on ice cubes and no food. And coming out of there, finally, I set a pin and it failed, and my partner, my wife, took a 350-foot fall and brought down an avalanche with her. And I'll tell you now, she lived, which was a bit of a miracle. But I remember my response to that was just screaming this gut-wrenching terror, and then tried to strike a deal with God that if she lived, I'd go back to church and I'd sober up. And about 6 months later, after several buckets of Percodan and several gallons of wine and beer, my nightmares wouldn't go away of seeing her popping off the mountain. So I went into a treatment center called First Step, and it was $1,000. And I didn't drink for a year. I went to 3 meetings. I went to that outpatient treatment. And at the end of that year, I went back to the psychologist who was the administrator of that program, and I took that 20-question sort of test, whether you're an alcoholic or not, and I passed. I wasn't an alcoholic, he told me. And I paid $100, and I was happy to give him his $100. And I went to Mexico for 2 weeks, and was drunk. I was chasing a frosty cold beer. It started in Puerto Vallarta. I went to Cabo and a variety of other little places, and I never did find that frosty beer, but I got beat up in a bar. And I came home, and then I went to go back to that treatment center to talk to that psychologist and to tell him I think he made a mistake. And he had committed suicide. He had been taking care of, he had been a priest, and his wife had been a nun, and she had cancer, and he was administrating morphine to her, and he OD'd. And so my next bout, I went back to the treatment center, and they raised their prices. It was a few hundred dollars more. And I stayed dry for 4.5 years. So I still, see, the first year I went to 3 meetings, that was kind of a requirement. And I wasn't court ordered. So then I went to a few meetings, I listened, and then I stopped going to meetings. But what not drinking did is it allowed me to help get through my education at the University of Washington. It took me 12 years to get my bachelor's degree in construction management, several community colleges, and but then when my mom was dying of cancer, and then I had gotten a divorce from Marg, who was in the climbing accident, and I relapsed. And so then I went back now for the third time to that treatment center. It's bumping $2,000 for this outpatient treatment. So this was a while ago. And I spent 10 years with a solid half-step program. And what I mean by that is I just didn't drink, okay? And so I went to meetings, but I didn't do any of the steps. I'll say I like being around people that seem to be happy. I had a sponsor that was perfect. He didn't want to work the steps with me either. And so then I relapsed, you know, so I got to a half step. So the next time, you know, I picked a guy who was extremely disciplined, so for 2.5 years, he was my sponsor. He was a big book thumper, and I was, at this point, frightened because it was more difficult to sober up the third time. And I'm super thankful for him. But it ended... you know, part of it was he wanted me to co-sign for a loan. It's kind of the relationships that we have in AA. You know, we share everything. And so when I shared at that point, I had some money. I think he figured that. Well, he figured he was doing what he thought he needed to do to survive. I'll just say that. And I'm thankful for his effort. And I'd been through the steps. And then I have a sponsor now. I've been through the steps several times. So the pieces I wanted to really convey today is that my picker was broken when I got here, and before I got here, you know, who I pick for friends, who I pick for sponsors, the notion of how to be honest, how to be open. I wasn't aware that I was terrified. And so now, you know, I do some spot-checked inventories. I've been on lots of retreats. I'm Catholic. I went on a 30-day silent St. Ignatius retreat. I'll just share that today. I retired in December, and all the stars aligned, and so that worked out great. My thought was that I was going to feel a great sense of relief and joy. And that didn't happen. I can tell you the last 3 years I developed cluster headaches, developed a medical condition, they believe, because of stress, so that I'll wake up at 12:30 to 1:30 in the morning periodically with severe headaches. So the last few months, it's been super humbling. I thought, you know, since February of 82, I've been dry or sober all but 4.5 months of that. I thought I would have answers. But now what happened is I had more time to think. And the freedom to think wherever in the hell I wanted to, you know. I think thinking can be overrated. I mean, I just, God damn. I just, to think about how I might have felt about things and, you know, and then I have, I skipped over some of the gifts I want to share briefly. There's some wonderful things that have happened for me in sobriety. I, I tried starting an AA meeting with my sponsor in 88, and for 6 months we went to the Matt Talbot Center and had no takers, but I got to know a Jesuit volunteer who became my wife, and we've been married 27 years. My daughter's graduating from construction management in June. My son is down in the Claremont schools playing soccer, and you know, he's discovered booze, which is a I had told you I was a visitor to Al-Anon. So that's got a whole nother array of challenges and fear. But I have segments of my life, I just have to remember how grateful my problems are really first world problems. But they're, you see, they're my problems. And if I just sit in myself too much, you know, it's just trying to be of service and to volunteer. And so, you know, I guess, you know, I picked up the things that I learned and that I'm still learning is that I have to be really intentional in getting advice. And it's been humbling. I've been started this fall, and I've seen a psychologist every couple weeks. And that's been... I thought I'd feel better after every time I saw her, but it actually just opens the door and ended up being more terrifying, you know? And so last week when I went to the pain clinic, you know, they evaluate everything and they suggested I see a psychiatrist. So I said, really? And they're concerned that they don't want to miss anything. They think I may have some anxiety condition that's provoking these cluster headaches. And so then I had these relationships with my kids and my wife. And I really wanted to stay lighthearted, so I was my wife got a job for 3 days a week over at Children's about the time I'm ready to retire. She's 16 years younger. She's not ready to retire, and what'd she say? She married me for better or worse, but not for lunch. I think that's what she said. I was telling her about my day. I go to the gym for 2 hours. I swim about a mile a day. I'm getting ready to go on a trek. I'm on a snowman trek, hiking the border of Bhutan and Tibet. It's 220 to 250 miles and 11 mountain passes. And so I go back to the mountains. It's where I feel comfortable. And and I share my day with my wife, and I was telling her my biggest challenges was that I was trying to remind people that I'm still important. And I'm finding that there's people in my life who are forgetting that. And she said, well, welcome to my life of being a housewife for 15 years. I didn't feel important. And then she's launched into her life and reminded me of a conversation we had 20 years ago I have no memory of. She had a job opportunity to work in the children family center at Harborview for 3 days a week, and she wanted me to take care of Emma, our daughter, 3 days a week, and apparently I said, no way, I've got a company to run. And it hurt her feelings and pissed her off, and so now I have to just sit there and listen. You know, not say anything. And then you'd think I'd get support from my kids. Well, they got things going on, and my son has discovered alcohol and booze, and not to give him advice. Last night I was sitting here, and he's a soccer guy. He had a little hip surgery, and I drove him down so he could have my little Honda Element he makes fun of, but he's happy with that boxy little car because he's got wheels in California now. So as I was sitting here, he's going up to UC Berkeley to go visit a friend. So I text him, "Did you make it?" And he says, "Well, actually, I stopped off in Stanford to see a couple more friends." And my mind starts whirling that he's partying. You know, he's got a party in Stanford, then a party at UC, and I just have to be quiet. And so overall, you know, I just want to thank you guys for being here. You know, and the biggest fear I had was reaching out to people and isolating. And I'm in this process now, I guess, of reaching out. I went to a few Al-Anon meetings, and boy, what a weird experience. I mean, it was just like a different world. And I don't know what else I can really share with you guys. You know, it's just, it feels to me like a mystery. Mm-hmm. It feels to me like God kept me sober and gave me all kinds of opportunity, gave me financial blessings, which now I gave me really a wonderful woman for a wife. And even though I'm terrified about my kids, they're great kids. And I think about what my life was like. So for the new people, you know, I just really hope you find the courage that I struggled to find. And within this room, there's this tremendous resource of people that are just really want to help you. And that whole concept, it's no different in Al-Anon or AA. I've been exposed to it enough to know the idea that we're in a room full of people where everybody's rooting for everybody else. I thought I was going to get away without crying, but, you know, what a beautiful thing. Where in the world can we go? You know, I can't even go to my church. I have to run away from the priests. I know they're going to tap me for money, so I'm done. I'm done. Thanks, guys. Thanks.